How you doing? Pretty good, Joe. Chris, did you end up seeing that letter?
We got plenty of chairs.
I can put one more in the middle.
You can start whenever you would like, Richard.
Okay. Well, we'll call this meeting to order. This is a special commission meeting of the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission, Monday, April 4th, 2022, at 10 a.m. Danielle, would you begin with a roll call, please?
Larry?
Here.
Ken?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Joe?
Here.
Richard?
Here. Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda? No.
No. I have one request. It's not a change, but for the minutes in the action item be recorded in their entirety instead of abbreviated.
Okay. That's possible.
Okay. You're welcome, Danielle.
All right. Does anybody want to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
No.
Nope.
Okay. Hearing none, I just entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I make a motion to approve agenda as written.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the agenda. Further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that moves us to public comment. So I have two public comment requests. If you would like to make a public comment or the form, you can fill out back there and put it in. So, all right, we'll begin with Elena in the West.
Hello, Sarah Commission. My name is Elena Novak. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Chalk Commission. It's a locally located state commodity commission established by the state legislative assembly to support and promote the interests of the trout fishing industry. Our constituents include three fisheries, Oregon pink shrimp, West Coast groundfish fishery, trout sector, and Pacific whiting. In the Port of Brookings, the BC fishery is a very important plant for processing. Brookings is our fourth largest port producing the trout product, specifically shrimp. And just a little bit of a background, trout sector produces the majority of the seafood on the West Coast. Oregon trout sector actually produces the lion's share of the West Coast production. Oregon pink shrimp is the largest of all pink shrimp fisheries on the West Coast. It's sustainable. We were and still are the first wild fishery, shrimp fishery in the world to ever achieve the Marine Stewardship Council certification back in 2007. Sustainability is highly important to our industry, and to remain viable in the South Coast, here in Brookings, it's very important to maintain our infrastructure. Fishing infrastructure is not easy to bring back once it's done. So in regards to the wastewater treatment conversation, I'm asking for your consideration of that very important investment to our area here in Brookings. And it is imperative for this facility to remain here, our only facility for seafood processing. I am open for any questions. I will be happy to leave my business card. If any questions come up at a later time, please feel free to reach out to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Gary Klein.
I want to talk to you about these emails that we're back and forth
from USDA regarding the environmental, or not environmental, but health and safety documentation. Have you had a chance to look at?
Can you mute him?
I did.
Okay, thank you.
Watch the cord, Mike.
One for you, Mrs. Hartung.
One for you, Mr. Gill.
Thank you. I got a few more of these. You guys can pass them out if you want. This is something that was brought to me.
Can you take one and pass it to the next person?
This was brought to my attention by a concerned citizen, and I jumped on it. Before I start, I want to say, first off, commercial fishermen, if we had no commercial fishermen, we'd have no dredging, we'd have no Nikina, those sport boats would not be able to get out. First, as a commercial fisherman that sells to Pack Choice, I am not opposed to a water treatment plant. Resolution 2021-03, supporting funding for a wastewater treatment plant. This is what the commission first saw. This was April 6, 2021. Action B item. Actual minutes of the presentation to the board commissioners for the wastewater treatment plant with funding from DeFazio. Okay. I listened to hours and hours of these tapes and wrote it down. You'll see on page 2 that has the times. The actual minutes of the presentation to the Board of Commissioners for a week. Okay, I just said that. Tape recording starts at 29:13. Commissioner Rain provides an info from the DEQ. 30:30, Commissioner Hartung says we should take first steps to see if money is available. Page 3, 3209, Commissioner Range makes a motion to approve draft 2021-03, supporting funding for wastewater treatment plant, seconded by Commissioner Hartung. Page 4 is the resolution that supporting the funding for the wastewater treatment plant. Only the commissioner signed, the commissioners originally signed that on April 6th. On page 1, Joe Spears, Commissioner Range, Commissioner Heat, Commissioner Hartung, Roy Davis was absent. You guys signed the thing, and if you look at page 3, where Commissioner Range makes a motion to approve 2103, supporting for wastewater treatment plant. The point I'm trying to get to is, if you go to page 4, this is the resolution supporting funding for wastewater treatment plant only. The commissioner signed for supporting it. It was signed by Mr. Heap and Mrs. Hartung. Sharon, did you know what you were signing there? Because I don't believe you would actually have signed that on page 4. Did you sign that it says on page 4?
Mr. Klein, can you bring your comments to comment? This okay. Isn't a question and answer period. We're certainly not on trial here, so make your comment, please.
Okay, my comment is, who added number 2 to the resolution on that page 4? That you signed when the other commissioners didn't sign that. And I listened to the minutes over and over and over, and Mr. Range was clearly stated what was. So that is my concern and my question, and what the concerned citizen brought to me was, who signed this number? Who brought this number 2 to that resolution? That is my question.
Okay, thank you. Are you aware of any other comments, Danielle, on the phone? Okay.
No, I don't believe so.
All right. That brings us then to action item A, the byproduct treatment plant. And I will open the floor for discussion.
Do you want a discussion first or a motion and then discussion?
If you would prefer to make a motion to do it, that's fine.
I'll make a motion first. Key elements of a business plan for wastewater treatment plant for each for Fisher Products in the Port of Brookings Harbor. agreement, we need one, an agreement with Hack Seafood to lease a wastewater treatment plant built to their needs and present it to DEQ for a permanent NPDES permit. They have filed for one. Hack Pacific Seafoods has requested that permit and then pulled it to see what is happening here. And I haven't heard whether they've reactivated that request or if we would have to file one. The port or Pacific Seafood needs an agreement with Harbor Water to supply water. There is absolutely no reason to build a fish processing plant if you do not have water. They use, from what I understand, 350,000 gallons a day during peak processing. Brett is here and can answer any other questions regarding the water. Once there's a water agreement in place, Pacific Seafood, in my mind, needs to have cash in the table or on the table. For us to build a plant and then they decide that it's not feasible or they've got a better opportunity to go somewhere else or they want to go out of business, I don't agree with building a plant without a commitment by them. My idea of a commitment would be Pacific Seafood pays the 20% match for the grant, provides all costs for labor, insurance, electrical, and any other costs related to the operation of the wastewater treatment plant. Pacific Seafood will negotiate a long-term lease with the port attorney and staff to compensate over the period of the lease their investment of the 20% match. A condition of the NPDES permit, which is I'll give you the definition of that permit. I can find it. It's a national pollutant discharge elimination system permit. So one of the conditions of that permit, number one, talking to DEQ, it takes anywhere from 6 months on to get the permanent permit. And one of the conditions of that is you have to submit your design information, all the processing equipment, and it be certified by DEQ. So in our case, we would want both the port and DEQ signing off.
And why don't you go ahead with your motion and then you can explain it out.
Okay. All right. So,
you want to do the motion now or you want to wait until we discuss it?
Well, we're in a motion now, so let's see where we
that's go. The end of the motion.
Okay.
Oh, one more thing. I'm sorry. And another condition of the NPDES permit will be there is no discharge of the wastewater treatment plant into the Checo River. It dumps into the Pacific Ocean. That's it.
Yeah, where?
Hey, did anybody capture all of that?
Excuse me, where does it dump into the ocean?
Excuse me, just ma'am, hold it down, please. We'll talk about it later. All right, so are we clear on what we're proposing here? I believe is Commissioner Rain wants to make a motion that contains those elements. Is anybody clear enough to second that?
Nope, not me. I understand Marta, but I want to hear the whole thing over.
So do I, yeah.
Well, let me make a proposal. I see an issue here for notice. You know, if we're going to make a significant action on this, we better properly notice it so that we know exactly what's included. So my suggestion would be if we want to hear the motion, and if nobody wants to second it, then the motion dies. If nobody wants to second it, we can then sit down and capture that and put it on the next agenda for our next regular meeting so we had a chance to all see the support material and think about it and then take action then rather than trying to do it now.
Yeah.
So at this point, we have the conceptual motion, I guess we would call it from Ken, who can fill out the details if necessary, if we're going to move forward. For now, we're looking for a second.
You want me to clarify the motion a little bit?
Go ahead.
There's basically five elements. One, an agreement with Hack Seafood to lease a wastewater treatment plant built to their needs and present it to DEQ for a permanent NPDES permit. At the same time, the port or the or Pacific Seafood needs a written agreement with Harbor Water to supply water to the waste treatment plant. Three is Pack Seafood pays 20% match for the grant, provides all costs in the operation of the wastewater treatment plant. In consideration of that 20% match, Pacific Seafood will negotiate a long-term lease for the wastewater treatment plant with the port attorney and staff.
Okay.
I do have Tony Bell Point, who is willing to speak on behalf of Pacific Seafood, if you would like for him to come in at any time.
Well, let's see where we go here with this motion before we get further sidetracked. Thank you, Daniel. Okay. So, you understand, I think, the gist of the motion, four parts. And if we second the motion, then we'll have further discussion. But it would be my proposal, if we have this motion made and we pass it, that we don't take action on it today. We take that forward to the next meeting with a full briefing and a full support material package and full notice.
I agree with what you just said.
Okay, so we're looking for a second.
I'm going to second you.
Don't second me. Second the motion, and we'll go procedurally from there. Okay. Larry?
No. Task force with a motion. We should discuss it before we make any motions.
Agreed.
So it's a no for me. I'm not.
All right. Appears the motion failed for lack of a second. I'll open it back up.
I would like to see what Ken wrote in writing in front of me, be able to study it, research it, any supporting material that goes along with it so I can read it, understand it, research it, talk to Ken if I need to, and then move forward from there. That's what I would like to see.
Okay. So there's been a lot of talking about why the seafood waste can't go to why it isn't going to the city of Brookings. And there's a lot of reasons for that happening that I've looked into, and one is the EPA has released the reasoning for that is it could be harmful to the municipal sewer plant because the plants are not designed to take fish waste. It could make health risks to the treatment plant and the collection system to be exposed to these pollutants. So that's very concerning, and for reasons for them not being able to release their wastewater the way they do. Right now, they have a special permit that they're putting it in our basin over here, and a lot of the fishermen have this stuff hanging all around their boats. It's not pleasant, and it really is harmful, very harmful to our marine life out there as well. It takes all the oxygen away from them that I've looked into, and then you have these dead zones. Well, our dead zone is out in our estuary, so, you know, our sea life is struggling because of these things. So these things have to be corrected. And in order to keep our jobs here for our people and be able to have a processing plant here, something has to be done. and, but we need to do it in a way that it is acceptable for everybody. I understand, you know, we have people living here that they don't want to see a big wastewater treatment plant. I don't either. And I do believe that there are units that would be more accessible. The footprint wouldn't have to be as large, and it wouldn't be something that would look bad. And because we have tourists that come here, this is a tourist destination. Our businesses rely on the tourists here. And then, of course, we have the people that live in the community that like to enjoy the sport as well. So Pacific Seafood, they built a new plant in Warrington. And they also put in a very state-of-the-art fish processing plant. I don't believe that the footprint is as big as the one that we've been looking into. I don't know if we've reached out to them, because now they are also releasing their clean water from there back into the Columbia River. So it says here that it is the first of the kind technology for clean wastewater, and it is also conserving water. So evidently they have really acquired something that works really well in the community. So we would like in the future to offer areas so that we could have other economic development with other processors to come to the area. We have a lot of young people that need good paying jobs, and these jobs do pay well. And I believe that since the Warrington plant is so much larger than this plant, that maybe their system would also be able to accommodate future use. So I'm hoping that maybe we could reach out to them to see what they have done here in Oregon. That's all I have. Thank you.
Well, that might set the stage for Pacific Seafood to comment.
I couldn't find any pictures. Tony?
Mr. President, this is Tony Delafonte, Vice President of Legal and Public Affairs. I'd like to be happy to speak to you and hear all of those issues at your discretion.
Okay, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, members of the Commission. Let me first ground ourselves in what we're trying to accomplish here, and then I'd like to thank you for your forward-thinking vision and making this happen. I don't know if you know this, but you're a coast-wide leader. Your model is being followed now by other ports. But for context, as you all are well aware, BC Fisheries years ago built a processing plant on port property and operated there under a lease with the port. When BC Fisheries then went bankrupt a few years ago, Pacific Seafood agreed with permission of the port to step in and operate. The major hurdle or impediment at the time had to do with wastewater discharge. The reason being that BC Fisheries was never properly permitted by the Department of Environmental Quality. Someone earlier made reference to an NPDES or NPDES permit. That's the permit that's required for discharge related to wastewater incident to seafood processing. DEQ operates under delegated authority from the EPA and never issued a permit to BC Fisheries. So that created a problem. If Pacific was to step in and operate, we take our regulatory responsibilities very, very seriously. We need to have a relevant legal authority or permit in order to operate. DEQ was unable to do that. One of the options that we explored was, well, could we potentially reroute discharge to the city of Brookings? As someone else noted, for a variety of reasons, that's not possible, mostly due to the lack of capacity or infrastructure at the city level. They can't take the discharge from that facility. And even if they could, it's not designed for treating that kind of discharge. It's designed for more traditional waste products as opposed to fish. byproducts. And so now we find ourselves in the same situation that we were a few years ago, which was, in order to remain processing, we need to have regulatory authority to do that. Mixing zone analysis has been conducted of the harbor in the area where the current outfall discharges and determined that there is adequate solution, as they call it, to permit discharge into that area. However, given changes in the regulatory landscape over the last 10 to 20 years or so, in order to meet those limits, a treatment system is required. Additional treatment. What types of treatment? That kind of depends on the discharge and the nature. A likely candidate would be something called a CAF, or dissolved aerial flotation. And it uses little tiny bubbles to take solubilized proteins, which is what we're talking about here. The waste is extra protein that was in the ocean to begin with. It dissolves into the water, and then it's discharged back out to the ocean. But it uses little tiny microbubbles to raise those proteins to the surface, and then they're skimmed off the top. That could be installed, and is installed in some cases, at an individual facility, what they call an end-of-line treatment. The reference to our system that we designed and installed in Warrington is a variation of that. It's proprietary technology out of Europe, but rather than using chemicals to bond to the proteins that are in the water and help raise them to the surface, that uses something called a type of centrifugal force as opposed to chemicals. That particular design, the Dantec system, was not designed for shrimp or crab products. It's a unique protein. They're highly soluble. They break down a lot faster than ground fish or whiting, which is what is produced in Warrington. Fortunately, you, the commissioners in the Port of Brooklyn, and this is where I want to thank you, because you have a very forward-thinking, innovative approach to this, and were successful in it, for the first time, to my knowledge, in securing funding by the federal government to a local government to develop infrastructure that supports port-owned infrastructure and the economic, one of the major economic engines for the region. We lease the facility that we operate in currently from the port. The federal government is now offering to fund treatment by the port that results from that operation. The cool part about it is, in funding that, it's not necessarily limited short-term to this one processing plant. It could be that there are other entrants into the market, and the port, by investing in this infrastructure, is supporting that kind of activity. Forward-thinking, innovative approach was incredibly creative, and I just want to thank you on behalf of the Pacific for that leadership, that innovative effort. Your model is now being followed by the Port of Coos Bay, who is attempting to do exactly the same thing in Charleston. And I suspect there will be others. Because, given these changes in the regulatory landscape, it frankly isn't possible for individual companies to invest at this scale at their facility. To have a place like Charleston or Coos Bay, you can't put in three or four different $3 million treatment plant. But if the port rallies together and develops port infrastructure that then operates for the convenience or in partnership with the economic producers in the region, they're supporting activity. So you guys, in developing this model for your footprint, were really forward-thinking. And we very much appreciate that effort. We're here to support that effort. I know there's some final details to work through in terms of what specifically is constructed. The port engineers that developed one model that needs to be done in concert with DEQ. I'm sure that the DEQ engineers will develop or have thought. What's the operating model? There will, of course, be issues of figuring out how that works. One of the strings on the federal government funds is that this is a port-owned and port-operated facility, so these would be port jobs, but obviously it's there to support the activity at the port processing facility that we're operating, and so there will probably be a usage or treatment fee of some kind. There is a matching dollar standard that we'll need to work through. That could be structured in a number of different ways, whether it's a front payment or something that's built over time or it's something that any new entrants into the space that want to take advantage of the sport infrastructure could pay into. All of those are questions that we'll need to work through. But the good news is, this is $3.5 million doesn't come around just every day. The federal government investing in rural coastal communities in support of a very, very important industry. Several folks spoke to earlier, and I know that there are other business owners in the room from Fred Fawning, Gary Henningsen, Brian Nolte, and others that all have crews and significant investments in that region. This is a cool opportunity. It's a very, very impressive investment by the federal government, and it's an incredible example of forward-thinking leadership by the court. So we're here to help think through these final details. So we did want to thank you for your leadership thus far.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your comments.
I have a question for Tony.
Go ahead.
Tony, Ken Range, is Pacific Seafood willing to enter into a long-term lease before this permit is issued by NPDES and we have to pay the 20% match? Obviously, it would be conditional on all sorts of things that we have to discuss. But I need to know if Pacific Seafood will make a financial agreement.
We already have. We just executed a 60-year lease that operates the processing plant. We're not able to operate that plant without treatment, and we won't because it would be unlawful to do so. So if this is a solution to treat the discharge associated with that economic activity, then yes, we'll be a necessary part of that. There already is a 60-year lease. Some kind of operating agreement for the treatment facility would be appropriate, and we'll need to work that out.
I'm not sure I followed all that, but the question or the concern that I have is we are going to be borrowing money to do 20% match on two FEMA projects. Now we're talking about another 20% match for a water treatment plant that you are the primary or the only user or beneficiary of this treatment plant. I will not vote for proceeding with a wastewater treatment plant if you guys do not have financial stake in it on a long-term lease.
Okay.
Understood. I was simply referring to the fact that there already is an existing lease and financial commitment. If the court were to decide to borrow money to fund the 20% match, which is one of a series of pathways we take, if the court did that, then yes, it would be appropriate to have some kind of operating agreement to do that. Another option would be to ask for private contributions up front to fund some portion of it. We could also amend the existing lease for the port facility that incorporates some aspect of match for this $3.5 million investment by the federal government. I think there are a variety of ways to address your concerns, and we're happy to talk about those.
Thank you. Further comments?
I have a response to one of Sharon's concerns. You know, the primary agencies involved in this whole process would be obviously Harbor Water, Harbor Sand, Brookings, and DEQ and Pacific Seafood. Right now, Harbor Sand has a collection permit from DEQ for sewage. They in turn pump that sewage to Brookings to be processed in the sewage treatment plant. Harbor Sand pays the city of Brookings roughly 30% of what it costs to operate the sewage treatment plant. there would be no reason for us to treat water, treat fish waste, pump that processed fish byproduct that should be put directly into the ocean with a permit. It would be, there's no reason to pump it to Harbor San, and then they in turn pump it to Brookings when it's already treated water. I don't know if that answered your question or not.
I have several comments to make, not surprisingly, right?
Right.
First of all, I am not going to be very comfortable entering into an agreement where there are other parties paying for this facility. And my rationale is this: I think this needs to be wholly publicly owned, so that we are clear in the future that should some other entity choose to come in and ask us to use this facility, we don't have all kinds of dangling strings where we have to have agreements among multiple parties. This, to me, should be a public facility from day one. With respect to having an agreement or a contract between Harbor Water and the port and the processing plant, I just assume the port not be in that equation. That's a discussion between the people who buy the water and the people who sell the water. All we're doing here is processing the water. We have no interface beyond that from my perspective. We don't intend to use much water to do this. Very little water will be actually required to do the processing. So I would not be too inclined to want to do something like that. As has been stated many times, the concern that we've taken forward from the beginning is we're operating under the premise that the Port of Brookings Harbor will be a working port. This is a working port. So we have fishing activities here, both recreational and commercial, and it is in the best interest of the community to continue to support that for a multitude of reasons. Economic benefits, jobs, you can name all of those that you want. In order to pursue that, in order to look down the long term, the idea of the waste treatment plant gives the Port of Brookings Harbor an advantage. It gives the commercial industry that's housed here an advantage, a competitive advantage over other ports. And the reason that that's true is because today, we do not even know what the fishery is going to be in 10 years. I can tell you things are changing in the ocean, and they're changing fast. Faster than we can keep up with. We're seeing species movements like we've never seen before. We have southern species showing up here. One of the largest fisheries in Oregon over the last few years have been Market Squid. Market Squid didn't exist here in any number before, at least not economically viable numbers, and now they do. And
fourth largest?
You know, that's the fourth largest fishery now?
Rookie?
No, Market Squid.
Oh, Squid. I'm not sure. I don't think it's commercial fishery. They're working on it.
Yeah,
they're just now working on the regulation.
It's
still new. There's no
regulation. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No regulations. But the point is, there may be a multiple number of uses for this plant that we haven't even anticipated yet. But having it here, again, gives us an advantage, gives our commercial fleet an advantage. That's an advantage to the community. So, I think that's the, well, I don't think, that's the catalyst that's got us to this point right now. That's the discussions we've had over and over again before we started down the road of asking for funding. I think Tony made a great point. There have not been many federal-funded projects like this to support fishery. And as we move forward, that's going to become an issue. The ability of this country to process protein to make seafood or out of seafood is going to be significant. I just came back from Washington, D.C., where we had a long discussion about aquaculture. Aquaculture is one of the initiatives of the government, along with wave energy and wind energy for uses of the ocean. You know, we're thinking aquaculture, net pens. There's a whole new suite of aquaculture opportunities out there, and they very well may be what we do in the future for protein and seafood in this country. Irrespective of that, you're going to have to process that stuff someplace.
And so, again, if we have a waste treatment plant here, that puts us in a huge advantage economically, competitively. So.
Agreed.
All right. So we don't have a motion. Where are we going to go from here?
I don't think that we're, in my opinion, I don't think we're ready to make motions on this project.
Well, at what point do you think we will be? We have an engineer
design. Well, we haven't really heard everything yet either.
Yeah.
And I know we have a design, Richard, but the thing is, the design is huge, and I don't think that it looks very well for our community. And I believe there's other systems out there that could accommodate our use that can be enclosed totally, and it wouldn't be visible to the public, and it would fit with the cosmetic landscape of our port.
I'd like to see what Orange it has. I'm not into a big old.
Yeah, is that so?
Should I speak or about this?
Why don't you go ahead, Jack?
You're afraid I'm going to cut that out.
No. What I'm afraid of is this is asked and answered many, many times. But go ahead again.
Well, I haven't heard it.
Is there a mic or?
No, just speak loud.
Okay.
Jack, here, I'm Mike.
No, I know.
Sure?
Yes, thank you. Good morning. As a fly in the wall, I have to say I admire the conversations that are going on here right now. The design that I put forth, okay, is conceptual in a sense. We have not looked, and we plan on doing it. In fact, we're having a meeting later on today with PAC Choice representatives to more closely look at the parameters of concern. The units that I've shown you, and there actually we have another PowerPoint that we put on top of the previous PowerPoint that kind of says the same thing but in more detail as the previous PowerPoint, shows these modest units. The largest of these kind of, the elements of these units are tanks. And these tanks are sized based on some assumptions on the worst case scenario. The more I'm learning about the specificity of this particular wastewater, the smaller this system is becoming. You might have heard Tony mention SAF. Okay, SAF is a fine bubble aeration for flotation purposes, uses air to float materials. This is the kind of approach that's generally acceptable in terms of this kind of waste. That's included in this system. But any system you look at, I don't care where you go, what kind of system you're looking for, they have to have some sort of a grit separation, separating inorganic material from organic. Inorganic can't be treated. All that can be done is separate it. Organic material, it's usually about the weight of water, is treated biologically, some way or another, so it can be reduced to zero, as close to zero sludge as you could possibly get. That's the objective. The other elements that are involved here depend on that waste. That waste is specific. PAC Choice waste here is specific. It may seem like it's just like everybody else's, but it's specific to this port. And the treatment is going to be, these days, I'll give you an example. You know, a clarifier, if you ever talk to a wastewater treatment plant person, has been in the business for 40 years or so on, and you ask them, what does the clarifier look like? They're going to tell you this big circular thing. It's going to be 50 feet in diameter at least. And it has a large rotating arm, and it slowly moves very slowly. Anybody ever seen one of these clarifiers? Okay. Our clarifier is a packed unit. It uses multi-laminar layers. It's just a packed unit. It's smaller than between these two tables. Okay, so it's a whole different idea. That our array of systems then are going to be modified based on what we find that wastewater treatment needs. There are other questions about where the effluent should go, whether it should go out to the ocean, let's go to the Checo River, wherever she'd go, remember that we are under serious regulatory constraints. We have to do mixing zone calculations. We can't have this big footprint of waste coming out of here, out of our effluent. We're going to be really tightly constrained by the DEQ on this. They're going to want to see pre-design. They want to see exactly how big is the area. I'm going to use the standard COM model that's accepted, multi-layer stuff, for the worst-case scenario for mixing zones. So irrespective of whatever wastewater, whatever person is able to sell us, whatever system units they want, I want something that I have a track record. The reason why I committed this one is because I've been studying this for 20 years, since 2000, when I went to Israel for the first system that came out. Okay, these kinds of systems are universal. The process is universal. The method of solution is universal. That you got to do the same thing. It's like learning math. You got to start here and you work your way up. The same with wastewater treatment. You can find new ideas, but you're still solving the same problem. So our idea is compaction, making the smallest model we can. And I'll tell you, as your engineer, I have nothing to gain from this. I get no commissions from any system that I recommend. It's a conflict of interest for me to take a dollar from anybody other than the Port of Brookings on my work. So I want you to know, I'm only seeking your guys' best interest on this. And I hope to better understand wastewater for our next meeting, and we'll be able to, I think, confine our system. The biggest footprint is going to be equalization to make the system so I don't have to worry about peaks. So with that, does that help at all, or clarify anything? Ask me a question if you'd like.
Okay. I don't know where to start yet.
It's complex.
I know it is. It's very complex. And you know what? And I know that it's very needed here. But the thing is to just do the right one.
Great.
You know, the community doesn't want a great big sewer plant. We want a fish wastewater treatment plant.
Well, have you looked at the one I showed?
And I know,
they're small units.
But Mr. Gillinger said in the past that the unit that you showed us in the past could also do human waste, and I don't want us to do that.
Well, you'd have to change. You'd have to add a lot to it for that to happen.
Well, that's good. But anyway, I just like to see a smaller footprint than that great big unit that you showed us from Minnesota, was it? Or somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that's.
Yeah, I mean.
That's the water biological reduction, and that's highly dependent on the the type of, you know, the needs of the waste. You heard Tony mentioned SAF.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good chance that that's going to do most of our work. We still probably have to have some grit separation. We still have to have some clarification. These are small units. But the biological reduction, which is what we want when we want stuff going out to the ocean, we don't want to send a lot of protein, a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah. I don't mean to sound redundant, because I know we have had a lot of meetings, and because of our communication with the newspaper, with the public, it's not existent really here anymore, and so the public hasn't been informed, because there's no way for them to really have been informed, because a lot of them don't take the time to look at our website, so of course they don't know. So anyway, there's been a lot of concern from the public, and they just don't want something that's
gawky.
Yeah, that it's not going to look well for the community and the people that have homes here. I mean, we don't want to devalue their property because of this. And so I'm just hoping that when you come back that you let us know, is it going to be an enclosed system where it won't be out in the open, and, you know, and really the size.
Well, if I understand the process now, there's going to be several more touch points before we have a plan on the ground, one of which is going to be approving the engineering design and the style, right? That's up to us to approve that.
Okay.
And we're going to have to select, I mean, I don't know that we're going to select whether or not to accept the money. I think that's a done deal. But I'll leave it up to you to tell us what the touch points are going to be going forward.
There'll be a contract coming forward to approve from whatever agency they're going to fund the money. So there's going to be a contract. Like you're saying, we're going to have a design that Jack's going to present. The board's going to have to approve that. I mean, there's going to be a lot of approvals going on. Plus, we're meeting with the EQ later this week about the permitting. They say permitting takes 6 months to 1 year to complete, depending on type of plant.
Really, if you come to the DEQ with, remember, we haven't been thinking about this starting yesterday. Okay, so we have a lot of stuff laid down with these guys. They're not so concerned about, you know, capacity except for fees, so much as process. And another thing that's really important to them is the mixing zone. And everybody probably in this room is concerned about the mixing zone. When I say that, I mean what comes out of that pipe and goes into where and how does it affect anything? That's really what the crux is of this permitting process. And so that is where we're most able and qualified to get to the point and answer. And I think that's going to help us shorten our permitting period, which is my objective.
So, Jack, I have a question. Is the port requesting the permit from DEQ or is Pacific Seafood? They've already requested one, and to my knowledge, they've withdrawn that request depending on what we do.
No, it's going to be the port that's going to submit the permit.
And then Pacific Seafood would enter in on our permit.
The Pacific Seafood is so very important as far as the process. But the end of the road is, I don't think anybody on the regulatory side easily, well, I can't say that's very good, but I can say on the money side, and probably in the port's best interest, as an engineer, I would not recommend anybody but the port completely have a control of and owning the wastewater treatment plant.
But obviously, Pacific Seafood, whatever equipment you buy, which we haven't even discussed the cost of any of this equipment because we have no business plan that I've seen, that they have to, they have to come in on our permit.
So the bottom line is the port will have the permit, and then we will enter into an agreement with whoever uses the waste treatment plant.
And you have a distinction that's common, and that you can do it however you want. You have owners and you have operators.
Right.
So that's kind of the way it works.
Okay. Thanks, John. Yeah. Before we take any more comments, we'll hear from the port.
Do you have anything, sir?
Nope. So to just kind of resolve what I think we've talked about today, we have Commissioner Raines has expressed his desires for what we might want going forward, at least some conditions. So we have a checkpoint coming on several different issues before this plant hits the ground. So we have gone beyond the idea of a conception here. We've passed that. We've secured funding from the federal government through an appropriation. We have the engineer already on task to design the plant for us. And as we move forward, then we will have more check-ins where we have an opportunity to weigh in. I will tell you about the visual side of this. I'm a little concerned that we're going to have some sort of an expectation that there isn't going to be anything here. We have no visual standards for this port that says, other than our retail buildings are designed to a certain specification. To the best of my knowledge, the county has no visual standard requirements for us to meet. So we're going to have to do the best we can to make this as compact and unobtrusive as possible. However, we're still going to build a plant. So, I think everybody clearly understands that we're going to have as small a footprint as we can, but that doesn't mean anything's going to be visible.
Of course it's probably
doesn't mean that, as we go forward with dredging, there's not going to be a big field out there full of dredge spoils and those sort of things. But we're a good neighbor, too. We're not interested in screwing anybody's life up. But, again, as I said, this is a working point. We're going to have to do the best we can to put all that together. So, any other comments or questions about that? Are we clear with where we're headed now?
Somewhat.
Well, you have concerns or comments, Bill, lay them out.
I don't got nothing to say quite yet. If I decide to, I'll decide to.
Okay. All right. One each. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, my comment is regarding between Sharon and Jax. Sharon's talking about the dead zones in the harbor and that. The discharge and the mixing zone is more generated for Jax. What kind of temperature are we talking about coming off this water? Do we know, Jax?
Probably not going to have too much of an increase. There's a slight increase in temperature due to the diffusers, that is, the air diffusers. But you're going to have not much of a change in terms of degrees. That is highly, that's part of the permitting process to make sure that, in fact, we don't deliver any warm water into the water.
Well, I would like to just clarify one thing. I'm not aware of dead zones here. We have in the past had algal blooms that killed a lot of anchovies. We've had high concentrations of algae and anchovies in here at the same time. But, you know, as part of the South Coast Fisherman effort to collect a lot of data out here, I'm not aware of any dead zones.
Well,
I'm not aware that we've killed salmon. I'm not aware that we've had major impacts in this harbor other than those anchovy concentrations. So I don't know that I would characterize this as a dead zone. I mean, we have huge tidal surge. We're unlike a lot of estuaries. We're short. We don't have, a 40-mile-long estuary where you have issues. We've got a lot of tide moving in and out. We have a lot of water moving in and out. So I haven't seen, nor have I heard a concern expressed by either National Marine Fisheries Service or the state of Oregon about a dead zone being created here. Now, temperature is an issue the Chetco River does not meet standards, has never has met standards because of temperature. And that has a lot more to do with the topography of the Calmiosis Wilderness than anything else. That's where it heats up, and it brings it right down here. So from the perspective of salmonids, we don't meet standards on temperature that the river never has. The other thing that is a limiting factor for salmonids in this port is the lack of estuary. We don't have a big enough estuary to meet the state standard. But other than that, I'm not aware of any problems, discharge or not, that have been created. Okay? We have a comment or question here?
Should I stand up and come up?
If you wouldn't mind, please.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm Sandy Richards Brown. I'm a board member of Seacliff Terrace, which is right across the street, right across the river. I certainly don't represent our community, but I think some of my comments might be shared by the many members of Seacliff Terrace that are here. Firstly, I'm very concerned about the lack of information given to the community. This is the first time I have heard about any of this, and it seems to be half of a done deal already. We have so many questions, we couldn't even begin. But I would strongly encourage exploring other locations. I appreciate Ms. Hartung's work on getting information on the Warrenton plant. I think that's essential that we get more information on that. We need to minimize the impact on fish and wildlife. This is the community is built around that. We also need to minimize the impact on nearby homes. We're immediately across the river. We enjoy the port activity, but I'm not sure that we would enjoy a large, noisy eyesore, probably with steam and things coming out of the top. I don't know. I don't know because we've been given no information. There's a lot of blank pages here. We have no information. We don't know what's going on, and this is going to be a major impact to the whole port, not just us. As far as discharge into the ocean, where is there going to be the discharge? Is that going to impact the beaches, the swimming, the water temperatures? We don't know. We don't have answers to many questions. So I think, and I would ask that the commission provide much more information to the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's bring this to a close. So where we're going to be now from this point forward is we'll be then going to the next check-in periods that we're going to have, whatever those might be, whenever they come. So do you have any idea when, have you heard anything about when funding may come?
In the packet, they gave me a question and answer. They said several months.
Several months.
So I'm anticipating 2 or 3 months down the road, we might see a contract.
Okay. So in the meantime, the engineering firm will continue to move forward on design ideas?
Yep.
How about permitting?
Same as that was. Like I said, we have a meeting with DEQ later this week.
Okay.
And we'll see what, from there, I don't know what they're going to want or not sure what they're going to say. But, you know, on DEQ, Pacific Seafood, they're trying to get 2-year extension on their temporary permit to discharge so they can run this plant. Right now, they're shut down. They're not able to run the plant. If Tony's still on the line, he might be able to speak more about that.
Okay.
If you want to hear
anything. Mr. President, I'd be happy to address that if you would like.
Go ahead.
Like I was saying earlier, the plant was never properly permitted, so we acted for 2 years under a temporary agreement with the EU. In other words, what better data to figure out how would we permit it in the future. That temporary agreement expired in December. Our proposal to the agency is to extend the agreement, that is, maintain the status quo, pending development of a treatment system, which we know to be necessary in order to meet the new permitting standards. DEQ is considering that proposal right now, but has yet to deliver a final answer. We hope to hear back from the agency this week so that we can have the certainty that we need more individual to operate immediately for the upcoming trip season.
Okay, thank you. All right, with that, I would propose a 5-minute recess. We'll take 5 minutes, and then we'll come back and deal with the rest of the agenda. Thank you.
Jack.
Contract. When we talk to them, they have no jurisdiction over what we're going to do at all, unless we go to their system.
I think the last thing you can take care of.
years they're over.
Okay, let's reconvene. So this brings us now to information items. We'll begin with information item A, the Stout Mountain Railroad proposal. Gary, do you want to kick that off?
Yeah, I don't think.
Tony is here. I was passing on to Tony. Tony, this is Tony's presentation of what he wants to do at the port.
Brought a visual aid for you. One of our many cars that we have, that's part of our armed forces train. How many, I don't know if you're familiar with the Stout Mountain Railway? Okay. we started as a park improvement project back in 2007 in Stout Park, and hence the name Stout Mountain because it's on that rocky knoll out there. And we just kind of excavated and built a beautiful rock garden railroad. It's very nice. It still works. We're going to run it the next 16th for our Egg Express, one of our original trains. We have nice dollar store big eggs that happen to sit on our logging cars, so it just happened that way. What I'd like to do, though, is create another garden railway, and that would be right out here on this green grass you have out here. The grass would go away. So imagine a rock garden in its place. Have you seen any of the paperwork with the layouts that I have? Okay, basically it's two parallel matching curves, 10 and 9 degree radius, so they're very big, they're very gentle curves. That goes around the outside. And then on the inside is a point-to-point, which would be one loop around a logging mill, going around S-curving up to the mountains, which are only about another foot and a half grade, to a logging camp. And then we have our logging train going around. And so if you're standing, you know, out there looking up at the hills, you literally can see what used to be there with the old logging train, you know, the route. So it's like, it's, for history's sake, it's just perfect. It's fun for all ages. We have, if you've ever been to our Christmas shows, we do a big Christmas show where we do all the scales. So we've got a following. Like I said, we've been doing it since 2007. What else can I tell you? The garden would basically look like if you're familiar with an alpine garden. So you have dwarf trees and rock structures. It kind of looks like you might say an ornamental garden, but an oriental garden or a Japanese garden. But all the trees are dwarfed. And it just looks like little worlds. You create your own little scenes around the landscape. We have all the materials we need. We've been given over the years just track and track and track. That's how we started. Somebody just gave us a big donation of track. So the track has to stay here. We can't, you know, sell it off or anything, so we'd like to use it. And we have plenty of track to do this and still do our Christmas show. What else can I tell you about it? We get our money from sponsors, from businesses that have train cars or small buildings. We haven't had actually asked for sponsorship in quite a few years. We just let them go for no charge because we've had them. Because we just haven't needed the money, because when we do Christmas, we put out a tip jar and that pays for a whole year. It's pretty amazing. Let's see, what else? We run several different times during the year. Any holiday that's landed on a Saturday, we've done it. From April Fool's Day to Groundhog Day, 4th of July, everything. Let's see, what else can I tell you? You have any questions?
Well, let me ask a question.
Yeah.
So from the perspective of the port, this will be all your materials, all volunteers running it, building it, maintaining it. You'll be responsible for putting the trains in and out and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So our responsibility will be just to provide a place.
Exactly. Okay. The one thing we have electricity in Stout Park, but we don't electrify our tracks. We do all remote control trains, battery powered. But if we were to do these two outside lanes in electrical, like we do at Christmas, we then just quadrupled our
range of trains that we can actually run. So that would be one thing that we would like to have. And I think it'd be really easy. We pay for the electrician to do it. Just put a socket right there next to that lamppost.
What kind of power does it take to run?
Oh, just I need one plug.
Okay.
You know, we transform the power down. It's not going to hurt anybody. And it's just harder to keep that track clean. That's the hard part that we're not really familiar with.
Okay. Ken, you have a question?
How big a space are you talking about?
The whole green, where you have the green grass out there, that whole thing. The basically the grass will disappear. The corners will turn in because they're kind of a trip zone. Kids are running around, so they'll turn into softer corners, curving them out, flower beds, you know, bright orange flowers in the corners, daffodils, whatever, it'll change just to make it so people, if it gets too crowded.
And how high will the structure be?
Oh, down. I mean,
no mountain.
Really slight. Well, basically, if you imagine take a 10-yard load of crushed granite and dump it in there in the middle, and then shape it out. So you have a little bit of rises. We'd like to have a little grade to go up to the logging camp, but it's so we want 1%. So it won't be very, very tall. But we'll have structure plants, some of the Japanese maples will be a kind of a structure, kind of give you the effect of having them. It'll give you some depth of field. You want it to be able to block off and make some scenes so as you're walking around the train, you can see different things. That's why when you have the two going around, the kids will want to follow it. But we have them going the opposite direction, so there's always going to be a train coming. And then the inside one, there'll always be some action going on there. So you could stand in one place and watch a lot of it.
Okay. Any other questions?
How many days a year do you see it running?
Well, as many as we can. I could see...
Ballpark. 15, 20?
20 would be a good goal. Right now we do about 6 or 7.
So it's not counting. Running, it's just the track sits there, the cars are gone.
Right. It just looked like a garden. It just looked like a nice little
help. Fenced in any way to keep people out?
No, that's kind of the rare thing that makes ours different. And there's only 3 others in public parks on the West Coast that are open.
You ever see any problems like when we have a big boardwalk, whatever, pirate festival or whatever?
We would love it.
But I mean, damage, people running through there.
Oh, no. I wouldn't worry about the worst part is probably somebody inebriated or a teenager who's having a rough day is the one we worry about. You know, that it's just going to do some damage. But, you know, the way we're doing it, I'm basically going to do it all in concrete pads this time. We did it in wood.
The grass will be gone, everything else will be concrete and granite.
Right. So you won't see the concrete though. It'll be camouflage, so you can see the rails on top. But
you have a storage shed out there for stuff, or take everything with you?
Take everything with us. It's just the trains that come out, trains and a couple of transformers. And the beauty of this location is we don't have to go uphill. I mean, when we do the big show and put out all the buildings and all the cars up there, when we do the Festival of Arts in South Park, it's a lot of work to go up and down that hill. This will just drive up and unload it.
Do you have a lot of volunteers to help maintain that?
Well, we have about 4 or 5 people in the club right now that help with Christmas and stuff. And I think we're actually going to get more interest in people and be able to run it more often when we get some people that say, hey, I'd like to go out there for a couple hours and run the trains for you, you know,
great.
Once we get it built. Like I say, it's good for all ages love it. So there's no target audience. It's just fun for everybody. It's free. I don't know how we would do a tip thing, because we've always had a tip jar at Christmas. We don't do a tip jar at Stout Park, but people are always going to say, how can we, you know, donate? So we haven't figured out how we would put a tip thing there. Maybe on a gondola, they could put it, I don't know. It's not a big deal that we, you know, that people are always going to ask if we're going to donate.
Okay. Any further questions, comments?
I've got a comment. The retail tenants all love the idea. They're only concerned about the grass area. It does get used a lot in the summertime for people coming here. So I asked Tony if he had other option areas that he would choose. That's his number one choice is that grass area. There's a rock area over here in front of the restroom, or you're talking about over by the memorial?
Well, since I talked to you, I've been kind of going over there and taking measurements and looking at it.
And one thing I did notice that the dog people are going to be, I don't think you'd be able to put anything there without making a lot of people upset. They seem to like, there's always somebody with a dog there every time I was there. And if we were to say, well, we're going to take part of this and, you know, I just don't want to ruffle those kind of feathers. And that's good. This is the Goldilocks spot right out here.
Okay. Any further? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your help. Thank you for your time.
Information item B, title is Fort Fisher's Drainage Request.
Mr. Drain.
All right, Kyle gave the board another letter regarding his signs that he wants to put out around the fort. And he actually located a few areas that he wants to put and wants to lease land for his signs. So I gave the board a little clearer pictures of what he was talking about. And also, the last time we talked about this, the board wanted to look at like one sign for multiple charter. People can all advertise on one particular sign. And I actually have a meeting today with a sign person. So I can give you guys more information later about one big sign.
So when do you think you would bring those to us for action next meeting?
Yeah, if I can get some information from this outfit, yes.
The discussion we had before, and I'll repeat the concern, at least my concern, is I don't want the frontage looking like a barbasol advertising thing where you got a sign every 10 feet. So I would much rather have a central unified fishing advertising spot, if you will, that we can control in terms of, you know, people go out of business, we make sure the sign goes down, and we make sure that, you know, they're maintained and they're the proper style. I think that makes a lot more sense for us in terms of the overall look and also the utility of having this thing. Makes sense to me.
I agree. One or two marquee signs.
But I think right now, that the last count I took on the back of an envelope was something like 19 charter six-pack fishing operations that I know of here. Are operating. So you can imagine what happens if everybody gets a sign out by the highway.
So Richard, I looked into, this is the sign they have in Charleston for the charters. And then this is one just from another area that lists charters, six packs. Can I give those to Gary?
Sure. Just
suggestions.
I mean, I've seen lots of those different things at various ports, and that's usually the way they are, is they're all clustered. So, just look up there and see what's available.
And that one, you could even have other business.
So one thing with, I talked to Kyle earlier, yesterday actually, about the signage, and if he can't get any of these other areas, he would like to, one of the things he would like to ask is take a sign that's out there on the road currently and turn it 90 degrees sideways and put another sign on the back of it so cars can see it coming back and forth. So it's just some information when we go on to it that I'll probably Gary add on the action item as another alternative. If we're not going to lease ground or give them any other places, at least be able to let them turn it and put another sign on it.
It was just
an additional request.
It would be my assumption if we build a sign center, that's where the sign is going to be, nowhere else.
I understand. I'm just making it clear. I talked to Kyle. I told him I'd mention it, that if all else fails for the current sign that he has, that would be something else he would ask.
And it's an existing one that he's had there for a long
You're talking interim until we build a sign center.
Or whatever comes after that. I'm pretty sure he would probably lobby to keep that sign as long as possible. But, you know, if we get another sign center, that'd be a different, you know, question of what we're going to leave out there as far as signage now. But until that came up, that would be something he would like to have happen when you guys make this an action item on the next meeting. Just consider if no leasing ground, just taking it sideways and side and turning it. That's it.
I have a question. I talk to Kyle every day, and this is for Kyle. This is a question. Kyle has four boats, four slips, pays for a building. Is he going to get a bigger spots than a guy that has a six-pack boat that doesn't pay for, you know, just has his $300 cleaning fee or launch fee or whatever that is? Would Kyle get a bigger for what he pays for size?
I guess we'll work that out when we get into the discussion about what we're going to build and how big it's going to be and all those kind of things. Okay. I mean, I understand that. I hear okay. that concern. So.
Javen was supposed to be here today.
Okay. Employee handbook revision.
All right.
I don't have much comment. There's a lot of red on it. It looks to me like this. What am I going to say? Yeah.
I just had a comment. Before we went to the next item, I'm not sure. I didn't sign up for that. But one of the things is that on the sign issue, you know, these big signs that you have at the ports that have all the different charters and all that stuff. Be nice to have if they decide to do that, put that out there somewhere in the area of that parking lot for the charters, so where people have an idea when they come in that they can say, well, this is kind of the area. When they come down, get on a boat or whatever else, it'd be nice to have it to where, oh, this is a sign here, this is where all these boats are, and it would give them a good indication.
Well, I would suspect that as we design this, I mean, one thing that I know is an issue for these guys is being found. So on the back side of that sign, we can put up a directory. So Kyle is at whatever dock he's on and then show a map so those folks know how to get there, because that's common in the other ports. You know, if you go to Newport, you're looking for a charter boat. If you don't know the dock, you're in trouble. So
well, again, having the sign that has all the charters on there that are working out of this port would make a lot of sense. Otherwise, like you said, you're going to be having 16 or 18 different. You know, if you allow one sign to go here, or three or four signs for different chart, you're going to have signs everywhere.
So it'll look like it's
really good. The community and the forest, everybody would benefit, whether it's a bigger sign for somebody that has a larger charter or not. That can all be decided, but having it in a position or a place that would get everybody considered would be a really good option, I think. Sure. So.
Okay. For employee handbook.
All right. So this has been out for a few months. I put the notable changes on the front of it. I mean, I think they had 2,200 changes in the handbook. So I put the notable ones here in front, which we talked about before. So if you guys have any questions, we'll be taking this handbook to the next meeting for approval.
I'm just assuming that when we okay it, then there'll be a test at the end for you guys. I'm sure we can tell you read it. So, okay, boatyard warehouse condition. It's bad.
Yeah, Jack's actually here. If you guys have any questions for Jack, but he gave us a report. And noted that he wants to do a little more investigation on that building before making a final determination and recommendation.
Is that about current occupancy and from a safety perspective, or whether it's about, I mean, I'm not an engineer, but cost effective, it doesn't look to me like we'd be well off to pour a bunch of money into that building as opposed to replacing it.
That's my first reaction. I wanted to get a corroborating opinion on behalf of the port on that. I have a structural engineer that I know is my favorite kind by himself, but he's viewed highly. Can't ever get him to go anywhere because he's so busy. But I've sent him some photos that the port has sent me. I was in dialogue with him today. He lets you know how busy he is. He doesn't want to come here. He doesn't have to. So we're seeing if he can get what he needs from the photos that he sent. I think I've sent what he sent me, but 25 or 30 photos, different perspectives. I would personally at this point, I have my recommendation for what I would think he should do, but I did want to get his reinforcement or something, but this is about everything he does. And I'd like a guy like that. Look at it and he's probably going to corroborate just what you said, that it's probably not going to be worth it to band-aid this thing over. Pretty soon you're going to be, next year you're going to have a whole new set of problems after you fix the old ones. So, but again, I'd like to hold off on a recommendation to the board until I get that second opinion.
Is there somebody that would look at that building and say whether it's safe to be in and work in? Is that you or him or who would do that inspection? I mean, I'm just looking for the port's liability. I mean, we have people working in there. If it collapses, falls, something happens, you know, is it that bad?
Well, I'm assuming that will be an impression that will come out of that inspection.
That's exactly what we're engaged in. You're right. And that's the most important part of it, is safety of the people in there, number one. That's above everything else. But, of course, then we want to look at the feasibility of how we're going to ensure they're safe.
Okay. Hallmark dock condition.
All right. Jack's here too. He wants to comment, but his recommendation was to put some survey points on the dock, so we have a baseline to go from there, and then do a load test on it, and then the survey points can stay there, and we monitor it from there forward, see if it's moving.
So the purpose of the survey points is to be able to measure movement and directions.
Correct.
Okay. Any questions about that?
I surveyed it before the loading and after.
Right.
Have we done that yet? Okay.
Item F will be a supplemental budget for FY 2021-22.
Yep, supplemental budget. You have any questions on what we have here? We're making quite a few minor adjustments throughout the budget. One of the main things, the cash carry over was we had a lot more than what we anticipated. So that's the major thing that we're making an adjustment on. All the adjustments are less than 10%, so we don't need to have a hearing. The hearing is a separate meeting with the board. But anything under 10% could be done at a regular meeting.
So just be clear for the record what this actually is. It's an ongoing reconciliation of what we anticipated versus what the actual is.
Yes.
And so then you make adjustments to it to reconcile that.
Yes.
Okay. Any questions about that?
No.
South Coast Night Security consent to assignment and assumption of agreement.
Yeah, we're informed that they wanted to do a name change. Apparently, Four Aces has purchased South Coast Night Security, and they would like to have a name change. So this is just an agreement that we used in the past for a consent assignment assumption for agreement for security services. So basically just changing the name from South Coast Night Security to Four Aces.
So nothing else would change services fees or anything like that?
Correct. Everything stays the same.
Okay. Item H, Business Oregon FEMA Matching Project L22009 contract. We'll talk about 22008 at the same time.
Yeah, both of these contracts are for the FEMA project. One's for DR4432, which is 4432 is the repairs of the slopes in Basin 2 and some dredging. 8,000 cubic yards of dredging on that contract. And then the second contract is DR4452, which is 30,000 cubic yards of dredging. So these are matching, come from Business Oregon to take care of our 25%. So we got our matching before we have our funding from FEMA.
That's a good thing.
That's the difficulty when you're dealing with the federal process. I mean, it's kind of indeterminate when that stuff can happen. Mm-hmm. Whereas the state process looks really like it's a little more straightforward, probably because it's much easier to do than the federal side. On the issue of dredging, Gary, thank you for the information you sent up on the stuff. Did you send us an email about what was in the
Oh, the hell, that, yeah. I finally figured out what he was saying. What was it? Pronounce that stuff again.
It was bottom page. That's what it was.
Yeah.
The tribunals in?
Yeah.
Well, that was, you know, that answered the question, so where did this stuff come from?
Yeah.
And that's no surprise.
Bottom page.
Yeah, we've got stuff in there that...
I don't think they have it in there any longer.
We're doing more refining testing now.
And it's in our ground.
We're refining testing now to locate it, and it might not even, as you said, it might not even show up in the substandards. Might have just been a hot spot. So we're following up on that now.
Great.
Well, all you have to do is look and see where Joe is parking. He didn't think that was funny.
Living board policy update.
All right, I do have the lawyers online, Jess and James. Just James? Okay.
Yes.
Just James. All right, sorry. We were talking to our lawyers about our policy. They did say it's a very good policy, but they wanted a couple words changed in that policy. Like I noted here, we shouldn't use the word boat, we should use vessel, and remove any word that says dwelling. So we plan on making those adjustments, and then we bring that to the board at the next meeting.
And the intent of this is to make sure that we don't get caught up in some things that we don't normally participate in, like landlord-tenant agreement.
Right.
Exactly.
Sort of thing. Well,
yep.
From the perspective of a resident. Normore Charter and Guidebook License. What?
So this is an update from the last meeting where the board wanted to have all new semi and annual mortgages that are new mortgages to the harbor that are 30 years and older to provide a marine survey. So that language is in Section 9. And I also removed, unremoved the liveaboard comments. So liveaboard stays there, and Section 9 is updated.
Did we make a decision to remove liveaboard, or did we make a decision to?
I just took off that recommendation to remove it.
Okay.
Because I thought we had a parallel process going on with liveaboards, one of which was to not allow liveaboards, and the other was to allow the people that are here until they were grandfathered them in other words, or just...
Yeah, I'm requesting just to remove that recommendation to remove it.
Oh,
so the
recommendation is that we allow liveaboards?
Yes.
Okay.
But also update our policy.
Now let's talk about the non-mortgage charter and launch fee. So my understanding there is that this is a discussion about whether or not when you get the $300 permit that you have your launch fees included. So we would issue them an annual launch permit.
That's what we're asking. We didn't really discuss what was inclusive of that. So one of the major things that came up was, does that include my launch fee? Me and Gary thought it would be reasonable to give them an annual launch pass with that payment when they come into pay.
I have comments. All right, I have talked to a couple of charter people, and they do fish out of our area. They do buy the sticker from the other ports, and they do pay for their launch fees. And so they said that it's very unusual for that to be included.
Unusual for it to be included?
Yes.
Okay.
How much is that annual one, Travis?
Yeah. Around $150.
Yeah. Depending on what time you buy
it. Yeah. When you buy it at the beginning for the whole year, as it gets to like 6 months or 3 months, the price goes down to much for the rest of the season. But it's just more of a clarification so we knew when they came in to get their sticker of what is this all pertaining to? You know, we already know that it's giving them a spot at the fish cleaning station to clean their fish, but launching was one of the questions. So it'll be one of the things that we're asking you guys to make a decision on in our next meeting.
Okay.
if we're going to include that or not.
Curry County Tourism and Promotions Committee.
All right, their committee invited the port to show their idea of a sidewalk along Lower Harbor Road and whatever other tourism parts that we have in our strategic business plan. So this is the tax money or TLT tax funds that would be supporting this kind of a project. And they're just kind of, they're meeting, kind of meeting and trying to come up with their strategic business plan, what to do with the money. So
are they paying for the whole thing?
I don't know what their policy would be, but they're asking us to get it, you know, kind of get in their strategic business plan to do something here at the port.
At one time, Gary, didn't the county bring up to us about putting that sidewalk in along Lower Harbor Road?
Yeah, that was the road department.
Yeah, the road department.
But they don't have any money either, so this would be a funding opportunity for the TLT tax money that the tourists actually pay into.
And walking paths, right?
Yeah,
that was the other.
Yep, the walking paths around the RV park.
I think that's good.
And along the highway.
Yeah, along the Lower Harbor Road.
So, in other words, you would envision that you would have sidewalk access from Fred Meyer clear to the end of the port. Thank you.
That's pretty close.
Pretty close.
Pretty close.
Or at least when you come down to the port from the retail buildings to our RV park and around, I mean, that would be our major focus.
Yeah.
Well, is this what they're proposing on this picture, the red dotted?
That's our strategic plan.
These are just ideas that we're throwing to them that could possibly be used if they so choose to use their ideas. And any other ideas that anyone has that wants to be included in this, just let us know. If you have any other ideas, these are the top two that we figured we'd go after and see where things land.
So it's really in their wheelhouse?
It's in their wheelhouse. They're just asking us for ideas and what possible projects that we have that we would like, and they'll see if they can fit it into what they have, you know, into what their plans are.
They're just including the port in their process.
The comment that I've got on that, and I don't understand, I mean, I'm not understanding, is port property the sidewalk that being put on?
It would be in the county easement.
County right-of-way.
In the county right-of-way, I'm sorry, the county right-of-way.
It would be on the county right-of-way. So, okay, because thinking of Beacon, Charter, sanitation, water, all these other easements that are around, we wouldn't be laying sidewalks on top of other easements so that they would have to be tore up if they have to get in the ground for those services.
It would be all things that would have to go over in the planning department with the road department and see what utilities are where and exactly what could be laid over and, you know, what entities. I mean, that would all have to get figured out in the planning part with the county to see exactly where the lines could be laid. Or the sidewalks can be laid.
That's something definitely we should check at the easements, make sure we don't encroach upon it.
My comment to you would be no.
Yeah, you're getting bombed.
I have yet to see anybody build a street or a sidewalk that 10 years later they didn't dig it up or dump it. But, so. Okay, any further on that? Draft MOU with the Curry County Sheriff's Substation.
This is the draft that went to the county. The county's lawyer is looking at it right now. I haven't got an answer back. The only thing they changed on it was the name. They wanted the Curry County Sheriff Office, not department. That's the only thing they changed on it so far. Okay. So if they, I would expect to have something back from them, and the board can approve this in the next meeting, regular meeting.
I appreciate you doing all this work, Gary. You're
welcome.
Okay.
Just a point of clarity, the FEMA matching project, the 009 and 008, technically that's not going to cost us, the port, any money?
Yeah, right now, that's correct.
Yeah. So we got money coming and matching coming, money is coming from somebody else, so we're not coming out of pocket for anything.
Correct.
Great. Okay.
Don't we have to spend money and get reimbursed?
Yeah. We always have to spend money first and then get reimbursed
right after
the fact.
Right.
So that's to the tune of how many million dollars?
It's almost $4 million at this point. But we're still, Jack's still working on the drawings and the actual budget with FEMA. So that's still kind of being processed, but the matching's covered. No matter where we're at, the matching's going to be covered. Up to almost $1 million matching.
So based on between that and the wastewater treatment plan, so there's nearly $8 million in play here for the board over the next period of time.
Amazing.
Next 2 years.
Okay. All right. Any further comments on that? Any commissioner's comments?
I just kind of want to reiterate, you just said $8 million. $8 million in the next 2 years we're going to put into this port to make it better.
Well, and significantly, that's $8 million that's come to the community as well. So, I mean, the contractors may not be local, but guarantee you there's some benefits to the community from whatever you do here.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Even if it's concrete and rock or whatever, there's a lot of, that's a lot of money to bring in at one time in the community for a lot of reasons. So. Any comments?
Jack, I want to thank you for coming and being here. It was very helpful to us all. And even if you had to re-answer questions, I appreciate it.
Redundancy is one of the best things I do.
Thank you.
I would just comment that I spent last week in Washington, D.C. at the National Recreational Saltwater Fishing Summit put on by NOAA Fisheries. And our port was featured, so I had to give a talk. So I used our port as kind of an example of what Oregon and Washington ports look like. I can also tell you, I'm sure glad I'm from the West Coast, because that is an absolutely incredible mess back east. So there are three on the Atlantic seaboard, not including the Gulf, there are three fisheries management councils. They are so ineffective in dealing with each other that the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission had to go to Congress and get authorization to basically run the fishery, similar to what our council does here. They have different seasons in the first 3 miles compared to the federal waters. And they're now proposing that you will have your state license, and then you're going to also have to buy a federal license outside of 3 months. So as long as we can keep that away from us, I'm really happy. So I came out of there feeling pretty good about living on the West Coast by comparison. So the other thing that was discussed is offshore wind energy. And there are now four pedestal windmills in Rhode Island and five in one of the two Carolinas that have been built.
How is that working?
It is a huge fishery success. They attract fish just like oil platforms do. But understand, they're monopod. So they're anchored to the bottom with a structure. Ours are not going to be that way. Ours are floating, anchored in 1,000 feet of water. So I'm not sure there's a comparable discussion there about benefit. But I was a little surprised at the reaction from the fishing community, which is very positive.
Can I make a suggestion to the board that all these people who are here, is there some way that the board can come up with notifying these people or giving them a rundown through the newspaper or some way of what's happening with the fish processing and stuff? I don't know how you do it. I mean,
well, you know, I don't either. We have a website. We have all that information out there. I don't know. I guess we can stand on the street corner with a sign, but, you know, from a practical sense, we can't dictate coverage on the newspaper. We can't get them even to show up at meetings. I don't have a good answer for that, Gary. I don't know. I mean, when we had the former newspaper here, I think there were times when I wish they wouldn't show up. But I don't know what to tell you. That's that's a problem not just for us, but for everybody else in the county. How do you get people to, you know, show up and pay attention to what's going on?
I just said, thinking with all the brains sitting up here, you got to come up with something.
Well, we now have the ability for people to sign up for an email list. It's very simple. Put your name in, and they will get anything we do goes to their house, their computer, and their office.
Yeah.
See, what else can we do?
That's something that we've had here.
I know, but I mean, it's there, and they don't even use that.
I have seen people put out quarterly newsletters and that sort of stuff, and it sounds like a good idea when you talk about it. And usually it works for a couple of go-rounds, but it's such a tedious process to continually do that. And again, you're limited. I mean, I guess we could send a newsletter to everybody in the Port District at whatever expense, but I'm not sure that's the best answer for us. But I don't have a better one either.
Well, I can recommend one thing. You know, the port office is open every day. Anyone can walk in that office, ask any questions. If April doesn't have the answers, you know, Gary and I'll call anybody back at any time and talk to anybody as long as they want to talk about it, or try and provide them and help them find any information that they might not know about or any information that is out there. I would say the biggest thing is the public's energy to come find it. You know, I mean, it's really hard, like Rich said, it's really hard to get out the information to every person, but if there is an interested person, the Port of Brookings is a rather large place that we are more here and willing to answer any questions.
Well, what surprised me is this woman here lives right, from what I understand, lives right across the way. And supposedly then people didn't know there was even a... Where have they been for the last 2 years?
I suspect that the vast majority of people in this community, and I say that vast majority, don't even know what the port does.
Yeah.
They're not sure how it runs. I mean, I'm always appalled to find out that the community thinks that the ocean salmon season is run by the state, for example, and that's just a personal thing for me. But, you know, we had one time before COVID hit, I had been talking to the Sea Grant program about having what they call dock days. And so what they have done in other ports is they will pick a weekend and they'll have what's called a dock day. So then they get a representative number of vessels, you know, the different types of fisheries we have here, and get them set up so people can come down and look at them and explain exactly what a trawl boat is versus a troll boat versus all the other kind of things. And then the port also has an opportunity to have, you know, a little sit down and say, okay, here's all that what we do, put up all the signs and explain it. And from my understanding, it's been fairly effective in getting people out. But now that we're out of COVID, we may think about doing that somewhere down the road. But you know, I don't know what you do to get the word out.
Is there a magazine or somebody in town here puts out a fishing magazine or something like that? It comes out. You've read it before, sure.
What about the Insider?
The Insider.
Is that the one? I wonder if he would be.
They do free advertising for nonprofits.
We're definitely
a nonprofit.
And, you know, kind of a pet peeve of mine also, and I personally post agendas on my Facebook page, and I also post our agenda on Brookville Facebook page. Can't force people to read or look for stuff. It's there. What else can you do?
Okay. Well, with that, there's nothing else?
No.
All right. Our next regular meeting date is Wednesday, April 20th of 2022 at 2 o'clock in this room. And with that, we'll adjourn.
Goodbye. So now, do you have to go to CFNC?
Tomorrow.
Did you have to go back to San Jose?
Not a jet plane.